Hello, everybody. I'm Lo Dobbs, and I hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday. Thanks for being with us today on The Great America Show. As the smoke begins to clear from the midterm election battlefield, it's obvious that the Republican leadership got outmaneuvered in a number of states, among them, of course, Arizona, in which we watched the popular Republican gubernatorial candidate beaten by the unpopular and all but invisible Democrat candidate, who just also happens to be the Secretary of State and who oversaw the entire election in Arizona while running for the state's top office. Now, this could just be me, but if I'm going to run for office, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to run against a candidate who also is in charge of counting the votes. I mean, folks, just how smart is the Republican leadership? Even the one bright spot in this midterm election was the fact that the Republicans regained the majority in the House of Representatives, but have, as things stand now, only a 7-seat majority. Usually, the party not in the White House wins on average 24 seats, so they won fewer than a third that number of seats that they should have, historically. I mean, just exactly what have the Marxist Dems done right? How did they do so well? We'll be taking that up here on The Great America Show for weeks to come. And today, our guest is a great American, former top Justice Department official, Jeffrey Clark, on the Marxist-Dem corruption and political persecution of Donald Trump on top of everything else. So back to the Republican leadership, particularly in the House of Representatives. The Republicans agreeing to be led by a rhino who has not a single conservative MAGA, American First credential to his name, aside from the endorsement of Paul the Rhino Ryan. So there is that lingering concern that Republican leaders are either too dumb or too lazy to have much of a chance against a political party that lies, cheats, and steals with abandon. For crying out loud, Carrie Lake, the GOP candidate for governor in Arizona, campaigned nonstop. She was a hard-working, energetic candidate. Her opponent, Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, she really didn't campaign at all. She wouldn't debate. And guess what? She won. Despite not campaigning, not debating, it's almost like she sensed how the vote count would go. Like she knew she had this thing. I'm sure that sixth sense had nothing to do with the fact that she was in charge of counting the votes. So let's turn now to our guest today, Jeffrey Clark of the Center for Renewing America. And I do believe we can all agree, Jeffrey, we need some considerable renewal. Jeffrey is a great American, former top Justice Department official. And Jeffrey, great to have you back with us on the show. This special counsel, it's all about raw, in-your-face partisan politics, isn't it? So now we go to two impeachments of President Trump, now two special counsels, years of FBI investigation, and the only lawbreakers that have been discovered in all of this in more than 6 years of persecution have all been FBI agents and Department of Justice officials, and of course, the intelligence agency's leaders. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, Lou, I think that anything involving this whole concept of a special counsel, special prosecutor, or before that, the independent counsel that Congress established by statute. I think these things are all anathema to the Constitution. I think that the framers envisioned having the president and then whoever was going to be the head of what ultimately got named the Justice Department, that they were the law enforcers. And there needs to be a chain, an accountable chain that the people can point to. And this whole idea of, which is a post-Watergate, reform, quote unquote, that you can create like a fourth branch of government to enforce the laws, I think that's highly problematical. And I think the appointment here in these circumstances just, reinforces that same historical theme for the whole time that we've had the independent counsel statute and now the special counsel regulations at the Justice Department.
Yeah. Well, let's agree that it's unconstitutional. I've got no problem with that. I want to blow it up if it's constitutional. It's ignorant. It's stupid. It's a really bad idea, especially when you've got an administration that is corrupt from top to bottom. There's a toxic corruption throughout the Biden administration and the executive branch, but certainly the Department of Justice, the FBI, the intelligence community, and it goes on. Putting any tool of government, any branch of government, under the control of a corrupt puppet president is a really bad idea. I think we can all agree on that, right?
Well, look, you know, I've spoken many times, done media appearances, and my organization, the Center for Renewing America, has been very forceful about the fact that, you know, we need reform of the Justice Department. We need reform of the FBI and the intelligence community. I mean, it really looks, I mean, how many different investigations and attacks, whether they're federal, state, or local, and it, you know, it does embrace all three, right? We have New York State, we have local prosecutors in New York City and in Georgia, and we have, you know, federal ones, obviously. How many different things can they gin up against former President Trump? It just looks like it's long past the stage where it looks like they're out to get one particular individual however they can. And so what they go through is a kind of revolving door of legal theories du jour. And if you watch, you know, what I've taken to calling kind of the, you know, pink slime on MSNBC and on YouTube and the like, I mean, they just, whatever the latest, you know, thing is, they're always salivating about, like, this for sure is going to be the thing that gets Trump and brings down Trump. And they're just, they have no self-critical ability. They don't look at what it is that they're saying. It's just, they're selling themselves to an audience that somehow has irrationally, you know, in terms of Trump derangement syndrome, convinced themselves that Trump is some kind of antichrist that, you know, the ends justify the means on. And it's really a perversion of the American system, Lou.
Yeah, it's a mass psychosis, but it's also facilitated by the legal profession. And no offense, Jeff, but the audience for this crap is not just the you know, the opposite side that the Republican, conservative, independents in this country know full well who Trump is and what he represents, and the fact that he is not the public servant from hell. He is, in point of fact, an extraordinary president. It is the left that is, without question, evil. It's an aggregation of evildoers. But the legal profession right now has not come forward with a solution. And they seem to be the problem. They really do. Because here is a guy that has been persecuted for, we're now in the seventh year, the persecution, the political persecution of Donald J. Trump. There hasn't been one instance of wrongdoing proved over the course of that entire time. And we're now talking about a second special counsel investigation, 3 years of FBI investigation, separately, almost 2 years of the first special counsel, the Mueller special counsel. This is ignorance at a high level, being practiced with just abandoned by the Marxist left in this country. Why is it the ABA, the legal profession itself, the judiciary, for crying out loud, the Supreme Court, is not saying this will end? Why is that so difficult for the legal profession, for the judiciary, and the head of the judiciary, John Roberts, to say just exactly that?
We had talked, Lou, I think on our last conversation about the ABA. I mean, I think the ABA has been captured essentially by the left for quite some time. You know, about a century ago, it was thought to be a conservative leaning entity. You know, I think it was just more, you know, traditionalist and neutral, but by, you know, today's standards, that's, you know, viewed as conservative. Now, right, you know, the ABA is woke. You can look at what its, you know, governing body, like the equivalent of a kind of House of Representatives of the ABA do, and the kinds of resolutions that they debate and adopt, that's true. So I don't think there's any help to be watched for from that quarter. In terms of the judiciary, I think there's some nervousness created by the fact that President Trump obviously was very effective in terms of, you know, seizing the powers that he had to kind of lean into what sorts of people were nominated and confirmed to the Supreme Court. So he got three justices, and you know, President Trump is not a lawyer, and you know, he thinks of things, I think, in functional terms. And so when he was hit with a whole bunch of nationwide injunctions by judges who I think were out of control and who were, you know, forum shopped for by lots of leftist special interest groups, you know, he responded by, you know, saying things like, you know, these are Obama or Clinton judges, and that, you know, got Chief Justice Roberts' dander up, that, you know, there aren't really supposed to be judges of particular stripes. You know, I think
Roberts really that big a fool, Jeff? I mean, seriously, is he really that big a fool, or does he just think the American people are fools? Does he really think that the American people aren't aware that conservative judges and liberal judges exist, activist judges, and a smattering of constitutionalists, originalists, jurists exist? I mean, if he's really that naive, or he thinks that the American people are that naive, he really does need an intervention, don't you think?
Well, I think he is a brilliant lawyer, and no one could take that away from him. And I think, you know, I've never had a personal conversation with him ever, but, you know, I can imagine that maybe if, you know, you were having a personal conversation with him, if you're a close friend or something, maybe he might acknowledge some of the points that you made. But look, he's the head of the Article III branch of government. And, you know, it is important that there should be, you know, judicial neutrality at some level. People shouldn't be in their camps committed to ideological principles. Okay. They should be open-minded. And so I think that publicly he has to stick up for that at some level. And I think that, you know, kind of you don't want to take positions that sort of, you know, force a reaction of, well, we'll demonstrate our independence. You know, I think there are better and more persuasive ways to approach the Supreme Court than to, you know, to necessarily take a combative approach to it.
Are you talking about me being combative? Are you talking about me being combative about it? Because I'm only beginning.
I think you're serving your role in our kind of, you know, pluralistic society in criticizing the Supreme Court. And I'm not saying the Supreme Court shouldn't be immune from criticism. I'm just saying that in the institutional chair where the Chief Justice sits, he has to look at things differently.
Let me ask you this, Jeff, because you're making an interesting point. But I think there are other interesting points as well. And among those, you're saying that he should pretend to live in a world that doesn't exist. You're saying he should pretend to live in a world, perhaps those days existed, we know they did, but they're long gone. And for a judge to pretend that he is, to act as if he's not aware that conservative judges are being mobbed, their homes are being demonstrated, you know, Antifa, BLM are outside on their sidewalks protesting their positions, they're undergoing immense intimidation. Now, John Roberts may not be having that experience, but Gorsuch, you know, Barrett, you know, Kavanaugh, they're going through that.
I think, Lou, that the reaction by the Supreme Court justices as a whole to that kind of set of intimidation tactics, where, you know, Justice Kavanaugh has to worry with his family that he's going to be assassinated after the leak of the Dobbs decision, that should be met, you know, with a lot of stern denunciation and opposition and calls for new security and calls for the left to renounce those kinds of tactics. I totally agree about that. And I also agree that, look, I remember having a discussion once with
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Did Justice Roberts call for the denunciation by the left of the tactics employed by their activist arms, Antifa, BLM, and others? Did he ask that? He did not.
I seem to remember that after the Dobbs leak, that, you know, he issued a statement indicating that that would be investigated forcefully. Obviously, we still don't know exactly where that came from, which it mystifies me that, you know, when you have a very limited number of people who are in on exchanging drafts of opinions and separate opinions, that they can't be nailed down who was actually talking to, was it Josh Gerstein or not. But yeah, I mean, I think that in this instance, though, that justices, you know that they can rely on a lot of the people whose job it is, right, in the so-called, you know, Fourth Estate, right, in the press, to kind of carry that battle forward for them and say this is just totally unacceptable. What I was going to say is that, look, I had a conversation with a number of colleagues inside the Justice Department going back to the Bush administration, and we were talking about some of the then very contentious confirmation fights for judicial positions. And, you know, they were yearning for prior days, you know, that even, you know, maybe I could even enforce them to admit that the whole Bork thing had been a mistake for the left. And it just created a lot of reaction and politicization. And, you know, I said, look, what's amazing is not that the confirmation process has broken down into kind of naked politics, but that it didn't happen sooner, because what led to that was a development in the law schools of a theory called legal realism, which is basically, you know, an idea that the law doesn't have its own content. It's just politics by another means. And, you know, once that theory is taught to a whole bunch of law students and they've internalized it, the fact that the confirmation process in the Senate continued in a kind of like collegial way for so many decades until we kind of finally hit Bork, you know, with some smaller historical bumps along the way, is amazing, because, you know, there had been generations of law students who were raised on this kind of legal realism dreck before things kind of reached a crisis point with the nomination and failed nomination and Borking of Judge Bork.
And then, of course, Clarence Thomas, Justice Alito. Right. We're looking at a court that is conservative, that's being intimidated by the left, and only the left. The right does not have an equal arm like Antifa. It doesn't have an arm like BLM. It doesn't practice politics, real or otherwise, in that fashion. And we also don't have a legal system, a judicial system that knows how to deal with lawfare. This is lawfare at every level, and there is no countervailing influence or force within the right, the conservative, the Republican party, to contend with them. Therefore, Mark Elias runs wild over the Republican Party. He is, I don't know what his record is, but it's got to be somewhere around 98%. And I don't think that's good for the country. Mark Elias thinks it's lovely. So does the left. But it's changing the whole atmosphere of American politics and the destiny of the nation itself, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
I agree with that, Lou. I think that this whole phenomenon of lawfare is out of control. I do think that the conservative side does not have either an equivalent level of defense, or certainly the ability to go on offense in reverse, you know, and in terms of the lawfare, right? Like I'm living through it, right? I'm facing a challenge to my bar license in the District of Columbia, which, you know, I think is totally frivolous, but which, you know, continues to grind on. And
well,
you're
an automatic loser. You're in a jurisdiction in which all of the judges are left wing. The juries are left wing. The system is left wing. How do you prevail? How do you seek justice in that venue? Or jurisdiction?
Well, I mean, I'd I'd like to continue to have faith, Lou, that justice will win out at the end of the day. I'm still fighting. I've been fighting for a year. And, you know, I do think that it is possible to make legal points, to make, you know, factual points when the time comes to show that, you know, it's unfair persecution. It's lawfare. I think behind, you know, I think I've been the leading edge of something called the 65 Project, which David Brock started. You know, who's kind of a practitioner of the dark arts of trying to, you know, stab conservatives in back alleys and then, you know, see them never rise up again. So, you know, I think that I wish there were easy fixes, but, you know, we need a better effort.
Wait,
I think
wait,
I would
wait.
Call
nobody's,
for...
Nobody's asking for an easy fix here, Jeff. What I'm asking for is an intelligent response on the part of the right to what is an existential issue for this constitutional republic. This is not merely, you know, this isn't just a academic discussion. This isn't just a smoke-filled room where politics is being waged amicably. It is lawfare. It is street warfare. It is in your face. If either you understand that this is the Marxist Dem Party, and they mean to control the country. There's a uniparty in the deep state that reaches over to the Democrats. There is not even going to be a necessity for two parties if we continue this refusal, this denial of what we are facing, which is a full-on assault from the left.
Lou, I completely agree with that. I think that it is existential that when you mount an entire effort through something like the 65 Project to try to strip lawyers who are, you know, creative and conservative of their licenses with, you know, trumped up claims that they were acting unethically, you know, you're trying to take out a kind of meta defense of the republic, right? You're not having a fair fight where, you know, leftists who say, hey, we should interpret the Constitution differently, take one position, and then the defenders of the classical Constitution take a different, you know, perspective, and then, you know, there's an adjudicated outcome. Instead, it's an attempt to chill lawyers on the conservative side against being creative, against being, you know, aggressive and zealous in defense of their clients, which is the ethical principle that lawyers are charged with doing. It's trying to make lawyers on, you know, our side of the divide think twice before they step out and they challenge any kind of societal consensus or what the Democrat Party is promoting. And, you know, if those chilling effects are allowed to take hold through the process of lawfare, then it won't be long before we won't have a republic, because basically all of the protections of liberty in the Constitution will be, you know, blown through or chewed through, and no one should want that. You know, even if someone is on the left, they should see the value of having a kind of, you know, like a dialectic exchange between each side that, you know, preserves liberty and allows for some, you know, evolution of the system over time. And if instead the one side manages to achieve absolute victory and to stomp over all of their opponents, you're not going to get liberty. You're just going to get tyranny from the left. And, you know, I think there was an age in which those who were more to the left understood that. They understood the value of balance. But, you know, I think they've lost that, Lou, and they just seem to want to, you know, have complete victory. And I, you know, even if we leave the law field for a second, just look at how America's cities are being run. You know, to my mind, a lot of my diagnosis of the fact that there's rampant crime, that there are people who are fleeing, that there are people who fear to get on the New York subway, et cetera, it's all the product of the fact that you just have long periods of one party rule and monopoly over a lot of those cities. Now, New York obviously had Rudy Giuliani for a time, and he managed to clean things up. And, you know, then they, you know, when things swing back to the other side, or you get a transitional figure like Bloomberg, who actually is on the left but postured as if he wasn't, you know, things swing, the pendulum swings back in the negative direction. You know, that I don't see why there aren't more people who are even living in those cities who kind of, you know, don't wake up and say, what have we gotten for supporting this one party for so long? We just see a deterioration in our lives. We have to, you know, change things. Even if we just change for change's sake, maybe we'll get something different, but they don't seem to see it. And I think at some level, it's the same kind of dynamic that's playing out in the legal fights as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you would say all that you have, but not acknowledge at the same time that this is a war on America from the left. This is not just bad behavior on the courthouse steps. This is an outright gunfight for this country. It's open warfare.
I do see myself as a warrior who's engaged in that. On the other side of the spectrum, against those who would destroy the Constitution. I'm cautious in terms of criticizing, you know, judges or particular judges, especially because I'm bound by various ethical canons. You know, not to do that, right? But look.
By the way, that's not a canon. That's a gag. And if your silence is required to preserve your standing in the profession, you're not in a profession, you're in a cult. And that's outrageous. That if they have the control over you, why don't they have control over the lawyers at the left, who seem to be without hesitation expressing themselves clearly about what their intentions are and what they're doing? Merrick Garland doesn't even hesitate to say he's put a special counsel on Trump after being in Washington for 2 years, and they can't even name the crime. They mention Mar-a-Lago, but they don't talk about Trump's crime. The fact is, the crimes are committed by the Justice Department. This is just ridiculous what we're watching, and there is no constitutional or governmental response whatsoever. Anyway, for all who are, victimized by this, the entire half of the country. So we're headed toward a different kind of order or disorder, depending on how you look at it. This is dangerous stuff. This isn't going to be accepted by the right. There's not going to be any more befuddlement and pure thought test to see whether or not the right will prevail, the right thing will prevail, the justice will prevail, because justice is dead the moment we accept this condition that we're in.
You know, I think, Lou, we have to fight back against having a two-tiered system of justice. Here at the Center for Renewing America, right, we do think that we are in a battle for not just the heart and soul of the country, but actually for the preservation of the country. And so, you know, we are fighting hard. I don't think that, you know, we are, you know, in a worldview where we think that, you know, we should always, you know, play in some kind of like genteel mode, whereas the left is always, you know, striking any which way they can. You know, I think we're looking at creative ways. We're pushing back forcefully. And, you know, I'll use the example of this guy, you know, Glenn Kirshner, who regularly attacks me on his YouTube channel and on MSNBC, et cetera. You know, this guy, I mean, he's going around doing things like appearing with, you know, stand-up artists, you know, and I think doing something no real lawyer would do, while at the same time posturing as, look, I'm a longtime former federal prosecutor, I can say whatever I want about, you know, the criminal laws, et cetera. And yeah, I mean, you know, if there were an aggressive project on the right that was the mirror image of the 65 project that David Brock put together and, you know, has a lot of dark money funding, then there would be ethics complaints filed against someone like Glenn Kirshner. Like, how do you get off saying these things? You know, you're always claiming that Trump committed XYZ crime or some other person. You know, you slander Jeff Clark on a regular basis. Like, you know, why are you doing these things? How is that consistent with, you know, ABC, rule of professional responsibility? But, you know, it seems, Lou, as if we don't have the same kind of level of, support for those kinds of efforts that the left mounts. And I think we need to, try to put together, you know, not just a good defense, but also a good offense, because, you know, if there's a good offense, then some of these outrageous attacks that are regularly launched, you know, maybe some of them would be left in the crib and never actually, you know, get off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. I mean, you're a bright guy, a brilliant lawyer, and right now, there are atmospherics that are being discussed. But getting to a concrete and specific point of action seems absolutely unattainable by the right, because you're talking about Kirshner, and there are, you know, dozens of others writing and blogging and posting and tweeting across the country. But there is no countervailing influence. And that boggles my mind. And I know that the Center for Renewing America is doing great things, and I applaud the center, and I think you're one of those doing those things. But I am so tired of watching a special counsel be appointed by a person every one of us knows lied, cheated, and stole an election, 2020. Very simple. By the way, he had the assistance of an active Attorney General by the name of William Barr. He had the assistance of the entire intelligence community and the FBI and the Department of Justice to deny the American people truth about Hunter Biden, about Joe Biden, and the Biden crime family, and that changed American history. Those are statements of fact, and that is, to me, it's incomprehensible that this country is not rallying to truth. And that is a deeply frightening thing to me. Your thoughts?
It is frightening. And, you know, obviously it comes back to the education system. I think, you know, the fact that a lot of students stayed home as a result of these COVID lockdowns revealed to parents the rot that actually was being taught in the public schools. If you have enough of that rot, right, and now we have generations of people who went through, earlier stages of that rot, and then they went through it, first in elementary school, then in high school, and then, you know, in higher education, we're seeing the fruits of that. I think there are a lot of people who have woken up, people in the center who are starting to react to all these problems that you identify. I think, for instance, you're raising the whole issue of the special counsel, right? Well, the regulations charge that the special counsel is supposed to be, someone who is, impartial, neutral, and has a reputation for that. Well, you know, what's come out about this special counsel is that, you know, he was writing internal emails and working with Lois Lerner about how to, push back on and strip protections from the 501c3 corporations on the conservative side of the equation. And, you know, part of what rigged the 2020 election, another topic you raised, was, you know, the vast injection of money, you know, more than $400 million by Mark Zuckerberg into leftist 501c3s like the Center for Tech and Civic Life to create, you know, this program that's come to be called the Zuckerbucks program, right? And so, you know, is there any indication in the record that, Mr. Smith investigated not just, some new 501c3 conservative organization? Did he follow in the wake of the Citizens United decision to investigate things like the, you know, Center for Tech and Civic Life or whatever special interest it is on the left, showing that he had a kind of equal opportunity approach to that. Like, no. And indeed, we've recently found out that his wife, Katie Chevigny, you know, if that's how you pronounce it, that, you know, she produced a documentary attacking the free speech decision from the Supreme Court, Citizens United. And then there are emails from inside the Justice Department from when Smith was there at one of his prior stints, you know, also complaining about Citizens United. So, you know, it doesn't seem like we're dealing with someone who, you know, had at least some reputation for being even-handed. You know, if you can criticize a lot of what Rod Rosenstein did, right? But just by comparison, you know, at least he found someone like Mueller who one could make a claim for that he had struck blows on both sides. Like, I haven't seen.
Well, you're talking a lot of. I can't let you go without reacting to that, Jeff.
Go
Mueller,
ahead.
He was abominable. He was absolutely witless in that entire.
I agree.
It was.
I agree with you,
Lou,
but I'm differentiating between what one could argue he looked like on paper before he was put into office, as compared to what he actually did, right? Like, at the point at which he gets Andrew Weissman as kind of like his number one right-hand guy, that guy has no objectivity, you know, within his body in any fiber or any bone. Then you realize that, you know, yeah, he's not going to approach his duties in the proper way that the regulations envision. But I'm saying, like, based on what I've seen from the record of Mr. Smith, I don't see that he even rises to the level of, you know, what Mueller looked like on paper before he actually took office. That's the point I'm trying to make.
And I really would just only like the reality, the truth. I mean, this fellow, Jack Smith, is a left-wing activist. He is exactly what Andrew Weissman is. His wife is a big time donor to the Democrat Party. There is no way in the world this guy should be, you know, when we talk about the nominative here, there's no way that Merrick Garland should be calling him impartial, fair, and independently minded, because he is none of the above. We are watching pure theater, pure propaganda being spewed from the federal government. Disinformation, the greatest disinformation source in this country, is not Russia or China, as we've discussed, it's the U.S. government. And right now, the Republican Party does not have even an intellectual response to what is eating away at the soul of this country and destroying lives. We haven't even mentioned the J6 prisoners of war who are the captives of the federal prosecutors and corrupt Washington, D.C. district court system. It is appalling. Historians will write their pages on this era, and we will look like fools, the fools that we are.
So, Lou, you know, in recent months, I've had the opportunity to meet Matthew Perna's aunt, Jerry, and, you know, it's just heartbreaking to hear her story of how her nephew committed suicide based on, you know, how he was treated by the prosecutors, right, who are just basically trying to drive him into the worst possible deal. You know, maybe one theme of our conversation today is that, you know, you're urging me to take the gloves off even more than I have already. But I will hearken back to one genteel thing, which maybe is a, you know, indication of a more gentlemanly age, which is that on the fifth floor of the Justice Department, in the corner where the Attorney General's office is, you know, there's New Deal art around, which I'm not fond of, but that's a separate conversation. But to the door that goes to the Attorney General's office, there's at the corner of the building, you open the door and you go inside sort of a wood paneled roundabout. And then at the other end of that is the door that actually goes into the AG's, you know, squarish office. But in the roundabout, you know, written around the top, you know, in wood letters is, you know, that the United States wins its point in court when justice is done its citizens. And increasingly, you know, Lou, I'm sad to report that is not the view, you know, and not the reality of what we see emerging from the Justice Department. And we need to get back to an age where that happens. You know, people can have political disagreements. People can have disagreements about how to interpret the law at the margins. But, you know, when things devolve into the nakedly political and we're on, you know, I don't know, it depends on how you count, kind of investigation number 6 or 10 targeted at one person, one man, Donald Trump. It's the idea that impartiality is what's ruling the roost is clearly, it's fake. It's an illusion.
It is. And it's time for everyone to wake up to that reality and to, and I'm not urging you to go into combat. I'm not urging you to take the gloves off. But I am urging everyone listening to see clearly what is happening to us and why. Our system is failing, and it is failing quickly, and it is near collapse. And when that happens, the law will not protect us. Law and order will be a memory. And people have to understand that that is a time in which there will be a response from the right. There will be a continued assault from the left. And that is a conflict that we do not want to imagine, let alone experience. So that's all I'm saying. And we have to know that that awaits us, and we have to do everything in our power to avoid it. You get the last word.
I agree with that very much, Lou. You're bringing to mind, I don't have the exact words in front of me, you know, John Adams' statement that, you know, our Constitution was made for a moral people, and basically at the point in which it ceases to be a moral people, the Constitution essentially is worthless. It just becomes a parchment barrier. And, you know, this is not directly connected to any of the topics that we covered today, but it comes to my mind. Earlier today, my son texted to me this, you know, the Tucker Carlson segment about Balenciaga with this, you know, child and, you know, with a bear who seems to be in some kind of like S&M suit, you know, just trying to sexualize children. You know, when we're seeing more and more of those things.
They're doing it every day. And the voice of, and I said you're going to the last word, so I'm going to have to shut up when I finish this. But to interject, we're watching the voice of commerce in this country, which is commercial advertising on television. That is the voice of America. And look at what you're watching, the sexualization of children, the propaganda that is spewing from the dollars that corporate America is spending on Madison Avenue and media and production, Hollywood production in many cases. What we are watching is that we are, without question, deviating down in this country to a point that is sickening, and I mean deeply so, profoundly so, and part of the issue at hand. It's sickening. Your point.
Yeah, it's revolting. It's depraved. I mean, you know, I grew up in an age where, you know, the titillation was, you know, what's Madonna wearing or not wearing on any given day or in connection with any given album or tour, right? But you know, when we get to the stage where, you know, there are teddy bears wearing, you know, pedo and S&M outfits, and that's being sold by Madison Avenue, you know that you're dealing with just a very changed electorate and people of the United States. So, look, you know, one way that I've approached my dealing with my enemies and my detractors, Lou, actually is to pray for them, because I do think that in many cases they're under a delusion. And, you know, if they look at an ad like that and they laugh, they're, you know, even if they're not going to go buy the product or whatever, if they laugh and they, you know, they partake in it at that level to just sort of, you know, snicker or something like that, they're part of the problem. And, we need to pray for, restoration, you know, a renewal of America. And maybe that's the good place to end, since that is, you know, the organization that I'm now working for, the Center for Renewing America. We do want to see that kind of moral revival, because it is not just about fighting abstract public policy battles or legal battles. Everything in the moral field undergirds that. And that's not because any of us at the organization here are perfect, but it's because, you know, at least we recognize that you know, there is an almighty God, and we'll have to answer to him someday. And even if we have personal failings, we don't want to be part of a destruction of the nation and a public policy that's just part of the degradation of America, Lou.
I concur, and I sure as hell hope none of us will be standing aside when it comes time to save this republic. And I think the time is nigh, near as it can be. We are in a national emergency that the country will not even recognize for so many reasons. But anyway, I, as always, Jeff, I enjoy talking with you. It is always instructive. And these are difficult times, getting more so, and doing so at an alarming rate of speed. Thank you so much, Jeff. I hope you'll come back soon. Jeff Clark of the Center for Renewing America, God bless you.
Thanks, Lou. God bless you, too.
Jeffrey Clark, Center for Renewing America, glad he's on the side of truth, justice, and the American way. A great American. Here tomorrow, journalist and author Julie Kelly on the corrupt January 6th committee and what happens next now that the Republicans are in charge of Congress. Please join us. Till then, God bless you, and may God bless America.